claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Recording in progress.
I need somebody help, not just anybody help. You know I need someone help. When I was younger, so much younger than today, I never needed anybody's help in any way. But now these days are gone, I'm not so self-assured. Now I find the change of mind, I'll open up the door.
Well, this is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal. I'm hoping my guest, Basil Valentine, will be able to join me here. I've sent him the link, but he's not arrived yet. Last night on The Lounge, a Real Deal Media production, I discussed the Uvalde shooting. It's still an important topic, pointing out, of course, that in some of the early photographs, we have a Masonic symbol at the back of one of the vehicles. That's a sign something is being staged or organized. We know they had a drill at the school, at the high school, the local high school, about 2 months before the event. They went through and made it all look as, oh, excellent. Here we have Basil. Let me get him. Please send again, Basil. I need that link. I'm going to try to, Basil, do it again. Send it again. Here we go. Basil's connecting to get the audio. I'm delighted.
Jim, do you hear me?
I do, Basil. I'm just delighted. I cannot see you, but I most certainly can hear you. There we go. Well, I was just delighted to have an encounter with you before, and you seem like such a smart guy. I wanted to bring you into the show. I want to get your take. You, am I correct? Are you in the UK or are you right here in the USA?
I'm in the UK, but Jim, yes, absolutely.
So
we're in the midst of a mini heat wave. It's very warm here. Must be 80 degrees Fahrenheit for an afternoon. And Royal Ascot is in full swing. This is what we call the London season.
So I take it you're in a swimsuit so you can deal with the heat better. Very unusual for guests on my show, but I appreciate the circumstances. I'm very keen on your interpretation of what's going on in the United States. We recently had the Summit of the Americas. And Biden bumbled it from the beginning. We know he's only a sock puppet. We know he's only reading from teleprompters. That Barack Obama, George Soros, and others are behind the scene calling the shots, putting the words on the screen for him to read. He bumbled by not allowing Cuba, Nicaragua, and Venezuela to attend. It was blackballed by Mexico and other governments. And then when he actually came to speak, they all turned their backs and engaged in conversation among themselves. Basil, this is embarrassing. This is humiliating that the Democrats pulled off this stunt to put such an incompetent figure in charge of the American government through a massive theft of the election, which has been exposed in so many ways, is just utterly repulsive to me. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree, Jim. From this side of the pond, this appears to be a new low for the United States in many ways. The Summit of the Americas was something of a flop. I noticed there was a people's summit going on round the corner elsewhere with, sort of genuine grassroots activists and speakers present. And what the summit did, just as the World Economic Forum, which we had in Davos recently, has done, who point out the tremendous disconnect between people in inverted commas, power, and the populace. There is no meaningful symbiotic relationship between the electors and the elected anymore. It used to be the case that elected representatives felt some responsibility, felt some affinity, even felt some affection towards the people that they represented. But we now have a political class operating entirely in their own bubble. They don't really represent anybody except corporate interests and the same authoritarian groupthink. They represent the same vulture capitalist interests, the same transhumanist interests. They don't represent people on the ground. So there's a huge disconnect there. Every bit as upsetting for me anyway has been the Soviet-style show trial, the Jan 6 hearings.
Yes.
In Congress, an absolute black farce of the first order. And what we're seeing is history effectively being rewritten in real time. The starting point, of course, is the mantra trotted out by the mainstream media ever since, you know, the night of the election itself. There is no evidence of fraud. On the contrary, there's lots of evidence, masses of evidence. You know, quite simply, starting off just from a sort of purely statistical point of view and a procedural one, I was listening to the coverage on the night. Trump won Florida very comfortably, supposed to have been in the balance. He then won Ohio, also very comfortably, to bellwether states. He was ahead with 60% of the vote counted in Michigan, Pennsylvania, and on another night, if the boot had been on the other foot, he would have been declared the winner a long way out. He wasn't just going to win, he was going to win in a landslide. And they couldn't have that. Deep state actors, whatever. I had a conversation with Mark Crispin Miller about it at the time, author of several books about how American elections are stolen. And he agreed that these things are done by the shadow government. I prefer that term to deep state. People got all very hot under the collar of deep state, or it doesn't mean anything, or, you know. Well, actually, that term was first coined by the academic Peter Dale Scott, and it's a very good term. But I prefer the term shadow government because I believe there's a effectively a complete government out of the public eye. These things are determined by the shadow government, and they decided for one reason or another that Trump had to go and that Biden would be installed. How anybody can believe that that senile waxwork and his running mate, who was ousted from the Democratic primaries because it became increasingly clear that nobody at all would vote for her, and in the end nobody did because she didn't even make it to the first primary, how anybody could believe that that pair got more votes than Obama is beyond me. So on the night, Trump's on the verge of victory. Suddenly they stop counting, which is illegal in several key states. And then suddenly huge numbers of Biden votes turn up, but only in select precincts in Atlanta, Philadelphia, in Michigan, where he needs those votes to somehow overcome the Trump total. The spin that was put on it at the time was that it was large numbers of urban blacks voting for Biden, and that's what got him what won him those states. That's nonsense. All the polls showed that black people were voting for Trump in record numbers. The assumption that black people, African Americans, vote for Biden and the Democrats is frankly insulting. A lot of black Americans are very aspirational and see Trump and his business success you can say what you like about it, but they see him and his business success as a tremendous example of the success of the American dream. So the idea that they all want to vote Democrat or something is ludicrous and insulting. And also statistically, if there had been this tremendous swing to Biden in the states that he won, in urban areas, amongst African Americans, and so on and so forth, that would have been replicated in Cleveland, which it wasn't, and in other cities, which Trump won. So you can't have, you know, the way American politics works is that, you know, if there's a swing among a particular demographic, the swing among that demographic is uniform across different states. But that wasn't the case. It'd be huge swings, outrageous swings to Biden in certain states and none at all in others, which shows that there's something very fishy going on with the fact that it's bent, you know. And I think the Washington Post themselves have 49 bellwether counties across the United States who invariably vote for the winner. And Trump won 43 of them. So, you know, game over. But all that, of course, is irrelevant when it comes to the January the 6th committee. There's no evidence of fraud. The events of that day themselves, first of all, what trouble there was, what violence there was clearly orchestrated by FBI agents, people like Ray Epps. He's nowhere to be seen at this hearing. Nor are any of the other figures seen egging on the protesters. Finally, you end up with this, frankly, sort of clown show where a relatively small number of ordinary people break into the, or invited, you know, I believe that the door was open for them to go into the Congress building. They wander around looking bemused. Most of them look like the average cross-section of American tourists that we might expect to see wandering around the Tower of London or Westminster Abbey in England, you know, just sort of baseball capped and rain jacketed or ordinary people. You've got this one sort of totemic clown figure in his headdress with horns and, you know, absolutely nothing to see here. The idea was spouted by the chairman of the hearings at the outset that this was a coup attempt is as ludicrous as it is sinister. In a serious coup attempt, then key figures in the army, for example, who support the coup will look to take over the military. The coup plotters will also look to take over mainstream media outlets, crucial broadcasting outlets, and seize the sovereign or the leader of the government, him or herself. In this case, that would have been Trump. None of those things happened. And they were never going to happen. It was never planned to happen. And yet, you know, the committee is carrying on as if a serious attempt was made to take power. And unfortunately, I know some commentators, some people who I thought I might respect in the UK, who are taken in by this nonsense. It's very, very worrying. It's every bit as worrying as the lies about 9/11. And what we see as a result of these whopping great lies, Jim, is that policy is formed on the back of them. So you've got, you know, we've established this stunning great lie that, first of all, there was no widespread fraud at the election. On top of that, we'll build another thudding great lie, which is that there was a coup attempt on January the 6th. And then we'll use those two lies to bring in all sorts of measures, none of which are justified, and all of which are repressive, based on those lies. And that's a very, very bad place to be.
Oh, Basil, you've made so many wonderful points, and I just love your exposition. You're so extremely articulate and on top of these matters. Just to reinforce a few of your points, no one was turning out for any Biden-Harris events. They had to hire people. They even had one in a drive-in theater, and they had to pay people to bowl in enough cars. It was in Phoenix just 2 days before the event, they had a rare joint appearance of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris together in Basel. The number who turned out were less than the fingers of your hand. Nobody turned out. Sidney Powell had a tweet of the voting, the way it had actually gone before they began to manipulate the numbers, and the country was red from coast to coast. I'd been predicting that California and Minnesota would both go for Trump. They did both go for Trump. He had 410 electoral votes. So you could see what they were up against and how massively he had to steal the election. We've had so many proofs of the theft of the election that it's just insulting on its face for them to offer any pretense that this was a legitimate election. Dinesh D'Souza, who just released his 2,000 mules showing how they use Zuckbucks, Mark Zuckerberg put in all this money to pay people to stuff the ballot boxes that were left out in public, where the Democrats knew their only opportunity was to use mail-in balloting as a way to steal the election. They paid out a staggering amount of money. I think it was $10 per ballot. They had to record themselves. So D'Souza has a staggering, trillions of megabytes of these selfies that the mules were doing in order to get payoffs. He's challenged them to run that before the January 6th commission, but of course they will not go anywhere near it. Mike Lindell had done a three-day marathon of one proof after another. The Texas lawsuit that, to its shame and eternal regret, the Supreme Court declined to review, which showed that the states of Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Georgia, and Arizona had violated their own protocols for selecting their electors, as though there were no standing for Texas to bring that, when it reflected a matter of the gravest national significance in violation of the Constitution. For John Roberts to decline to take that case was an egregious black mark on the Supreme Court that will stain its history, its legacy forever, Basil. Further thoughts?
Well, I think you're paying the price for not investigating the theft of various other elections. The first one that comes to mind, because the events of the night of November Day in June in 2020 reminded me very much of November 2004, when the election was stolen by Bush Jr. from John Kerry. Now, interestingly enough, on that occasion, it was a Republican stealing it from a Democrat. As I said, these things are shadow government decisions. So, the idea that it's just simply one party that's doing the dirty all the time, which at the time I thought it was, and so did Mark Crispin Miller, for that matter, who wrote the book How the Republicans Stole the 2004 Election and How They Plan to Do So Again. He immediately went, his status as an intellectual immediately went from being very high to being derided as a conspiracy theorist. Because the theft of elections goes obviously right to the heart of democracy and the validity of the state itself. If you can't hold free and fair elections, where the one person, one vote, votes are counted and then applied according to whatever voting system you have, be it first past the post in constituencies here in the UK or proportional representation or the electoral college or whatever. If you can't do that and demonstrate that that is the case with everybody's complete confidence, you don't have a democracy. You have a sham. You have a banana republic type situation. And the United States, quite understandably, has been very reluctant to confront that. 2004, nothing happened. But I say nothing happened. There was a court case in Ohio which ended up with somebody being killed. If my memory serves me, there was some, a certain amount of the shenanigans came somewhere near the surface there. But I was watching that coverage at the time, and I remember Jim Zogby, the pollster, coming on and saying it's been very close, but the independents and undecideds are breaking 2-for-1 in favor of Kerry. and he'll be president. And they went over to the White House briefing room or whatever, and no concession yet from Bush. You know, they're still optimistic. They want to wait until all the votes are counted. But, you know, really, there was a point where he should have conceded, and it was obvious that he was going to have to concede. On that occasion, of course, his chief political operative was Karl Rove. And I think he's got him to thank for winning that election. If you want all the details, they're all in Mark's excellent book. I think that, A, the 2004 election was much closer than 2020. They didn't have to do quite as much jiggery-pogery. Thereafter, 2008 and 12, Obama. Yeah, I think he probably won, you know, on the whole hope and change thing. And I don't think those elections were rigged. There was no real popular support for either McCain or Mitt Romney, for that matter. 2016, I know some people have thought that Trump cheated to win, but I'm less sure about that. And 2020, well, we know the absolute debacle that happened then. But the biggest problem really is, well, two problems. One, a reluctance, nay, refusal by the public to contemplate the idea that their elections are rigged. And two, of course, the mainstream media, who refuse to investigate, refuse ever to look at the subject of electoral irregularities. And that's absolutely shameful, but we shouldn't really expect any difference.
You know what's fascinating about the 2016, Basil, is that it was massively rigged for Hillary. And Trump just received such an overwhelming response from rural areas. When they rig the elections, they rig it in areas where the votes are, and those are the urban centers. That's why they're so crucial in this theft of election. But there was such a surge of support from Trump, from the rural areas. That's why the Democrats went all out with his last election, in order to make sure there was no possibility he could win it legitimately, that they pulled out all the stops. But I'm telling you, in 2016, they had rigged polls. They had photoshopped events.
Right.
Trump would be in Boca Raton drawing 30,000. She'd be in St. Petersburg drawing 300. So they photoshopped the crowd to make it look as though Hillary was getting a turnout comparable to Trump. We even have intercepted emails of pollsters who are admitting they were oversampling Democrats, women, self-described progressives, in order to guarantee it would be skewed toward Hillary. In other words, they're trying to set up poll results that would correspond to the outcome of the election when they stole it to make it look as though it had been legit. 2000 was so significant. They had to steal the election. Florida, Jeb Bush as a governor. They had to bring in Bush Cheney to give us 9/11 and the Patriot Act, Basil, just as they had to steal 2020 to bring in Biden and Harris and give us the Great Reset, you know, to destroy America, which is going on apace. I mean, it's just dumbfounding. It's mind-boggling to observe what's happening to America day after day after day.
Yeah, no, I hear you, and I really feel for the American people who are being hoodwinked, and whose institutions, whose way of life, whose sort of common understanding is being attacked, because what the Democrats are bringing in is a sort of hideous form of cultural counter-revolution, where the very definitions of the things that we are and the things that we hold dear are being challenged. You know, to start, we've got the whole entirely false notion that the United States is somehow systemically, endemically...
racist.
Unforgivably racist, exactly.
It's all nonsense. We're probably the least racist and have done the most to overcome our history of any nation in the world, with all the anti-discrimination laws, all the civil rights acts, all the affirmative action policies, Basil. We elected a president, black president, not once but twice with great enthusiasm. This is just a fabricated, exaggerated. This is cultural Marxism at work. Do a diagnosis of a society and figure what is the most likely way to fracture the society and pit elements against one another. And looking at the history of the United States, because of the existence of slavery and the Civil War, they figured it would be along racial lines. But the United States is not a racist nation, so they've had to manufacture it. And all this nonsense about white supremacy is beyond belief. And many of their fabricated actions are self-refuting. For example, in this late Buffalo shooting, which was modeled after New Zealand, it's completely artificial. No shell casings coming out of the weapon, driving around, shooting people who fall before they're shot, no blood, point blank firing into a skull, no blowing apart, just a buff of air. A black guy claimed he had encountered the shooter the day before and talked with him for an hour about critical race theory and even bought him a Gatorade. And as one of my commentators observed, what self-respecting racist is going to talk to a black guy for an hour about critical race theory? I mean, it's just absurd. And this same guy was claiming to have timed the shots in milliseconds. He said the second shot was 1.7 seconds after the first. Basel, have you heard anything so absurd?
I haven't looked at the Buffalo shooting closely. Likewise, the recent Texas one is definitely...
I guarantee 100%. I've done a huge amount with several colleagues, and they're both totally staged events trying to promote the Democrat gun control agenda, but it's not working, Basel. We're about to hit the break, by the way, and we'll have 4 or 5 minutes here, and we'll continue our conversation. I'm simply delighted you could join me today, Basel.
Take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Amazon banned my book so you wouldn't learn what really happened at Sandy Hook. It was a FEMA drill presented as mass murder to promote gun control. Then they sued to shut me up, and the Wisconsin courts played along. I have the proof and the law on my side. What I don't have is the money. They want to do to us what they've already done to Canada. Take guns, impose tyranny. It's on the way with Remington's help. First insurance, then registration, then confiscation. I'm asking SCOTUS to stop it. GiveSendGo.com, funding Fetzer. Check it out. This is for all the marbles.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of a library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
Revolution Radio every Wednesday 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, I'm delighted to be joined today by Basil Valentine from the UK, giving us a perspective from across the pond. We're talking about the gross situation here in the United States, how the January 6th committee is indeed a Stalinist-style show trial. I never expected to see anything like this. The Democrats have gone stark, raving mad. Basil, I've never witnessed anything like this at a once great political party in the United States should turn itself into, it's not just a caricature, but a truly authoritarian, ideologically driven, totally unscrupulous, lawless, unconstitutional entity that's actually destroying American rights to maintain their own political power. It is the most disgraceful political display I've seen, short of assassination of JFK. Your thoughts?
Well, absolutely, Jim. It's one of the most extraordinary things in American politics over the last, I would say, 10 years, but it's arguably been brewing for more like 30 years, is the way the Democratic Party has turned itself completely inside out. And instead of being generally for peace, for a harmonious society, with sensible ideas about foreign policy, distribution of wealth, education, and all the rest of it, it's turned into this, bizarre authoritarian, warmongering, identity politics obsessed behemoth. And this is really relatively recent. It's totally unrecognizable from the Democratic Party of John F. Kennedy. In fact, he would probably get thrown out these days. It's unrecognizable from the principles of Martin Luther King. It's pretty unrecognizable from the age of the likes of Mike Dukakis and, you know, the sort of easygoing, what I might call the easygoing liberalism of the end of the 20th century. It's been replaced by some sort of rabid neo-Marxist authoritarianism, which I don't recognize. When I grew up, I used to think that the Democrats were basically the good guys, and it was the Republicans who were warmongering all the time and wanting to trample on the little people. And that's been completely turned around.
Yes, it has been turned around. I mean, Donald Trump effected a hostile takeover of the Republican Party to turn it into a populist party. I mean, it was one of the most stunning political developments of the last several centuries in American politics. Yeah. And the public has responded to him with just an enormous. If you ever saw the video of Trump coming in on a chopper in Butler, the hills of Butler, Pennsylvania, where tens of thousands were out there just awaiting his arrival, it was awesome, just absolutely stunning. And while he has his flaws, I've been a severe critic of him on several counts. He made a surging American economy, made us energy independent. He clamped down on the border. He saw the lowest earning wage earners see their wages rise at the highest rate, as you observe. Erasmus and Paul on 2019 December showed 40% of black likely voters were going to vote for Donald Trump because they had actually benefited from him, unlike the Democrat Party, which has never done them any good, but only used them as, you know, poster boys for their alleged dedication to American civil rights, when in fact they could care less. Look how they're abusing those they claim committed these acts at the Capitol. They're being locked up. They're in solitary confinement. No habeas corpus. It's a stunning demolition of the Constitution by the Democrats before our very eyes.
You know, people have been critical of Trump for not speaking up on behalf of those that have been thrown in jail as a result of January the 6th. I think there's been at least one suicide already. And people are being kept in conditions that are in no way commensurate with whatever, in inverted commas, offense it is they're supposed to have committed.
For the most part, peaceful protests, but you had FBI provocateurs. James, the brother of John Sullivan, a noted Antifa leader, described his brother as leading 226 Antifa members dressed as Trump supporters into the Capitol. We know they had a fellow named Ray Epps, who was a provocateur, who was an FBI asset. We know Nancy Pelosi refused the offer of Trump to provide National Guard troops there days in advance. She and Chuck Schumer and Mayor Bowser all refused because they had other plans in mind. They wanted to create this tempest in a teapot and then catapult it into a presumptive incitement to insurrection when it was anything but. As a Federalist has very discerningly dissected, there was no incitement, which means encouraging imminent lawless activity. Trump was speaking at the Ellipse. It's a mile and a half away. He didn't finish speaking until 1:11. He told his followers to be peaceful in their protest against a stolen election. There was no incitement. And anyone who thinks there was an effort here to overthrow the government of the United States just doesn't, you know, has their head where the sun doesn't shine. So there was no insurrection. You were making those points earlier on, Basil. The whole thing is trumped up and to get Trump. I mean, that's the whole idea. They're trying to smear him because under an obscure provision of the 14th Amendment, anyone who incites an insurrection against the government of the United States is ineligible to run for federal office. That's the whole idea. They know Trump is going to clean their clock again, and it's increasingly unlikely they're going to be able to pull off the same kind of massive wholesale theft of the election they did in 2020.
Yeah, I believe you are right about the attempt to block Trump from ever running again. I mean, I think there's much rather see him in handcuffs, frankly. The attempt is to destroy not only him, but the populist movement that he fronted and that he represents, with this absurd notion of basically painting all Trump supporters as seditionists and even terrorists of some description. They're all white nationalists, white supremacists, and borderline terrorists, Jim. I don't know if you saw the recent arrest in, of all places, Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, of 30 supposed white nationalist Patriot Front supporters who apparently were going to riot and disrupt a gay pride march. And of all people, my favorite left-wing commentator, Jimmy Dore, pointed out in a recent video, which shows a photograph of all these so-called Patriot Front chaps being arrested. They've all still got their faces covered up, right up to the eyes, and are wearing baseball caps, so they can't be identified. And their uniforms, etc., make them once again look remarkably like federal agents.
Yes, yes, yes. FBI agents dressed up as domestic terrorists. That wouldn't surprise me at all. And Merrick Garland.
They've got to feed this narrative that there is somehow a dangerous white supremacist, white nationalist element out there. You know, Biden made himself look completely ridiculous as far as I'm concerned. It was at his inauguration, his phony inauguration address, where he said, the biggest problem facing us is white supremacism. I mean, where did he get that idea from back in January 2021? I mean, who fed him that line, Jim? That's what I want to know. Absolutely bizarre, off-the-chart stuff. No evidence whatsoever of widespread white supremacism in the United States, let alone it being some kind of imminent sort of terrorist or, countercultural threat. None whatsoever. And yet he made it the centerpiece of his inauguration address. I found that puzzling. But yeah, on the ground in real time, I've been told that the FBI is being purged of anybody who isn't a Democrat, of anybody who isn't going along with this. Like the Department of Justice, it's been politicized in recent years by this administration in a way that was never supposed to have happened. Even up to the point where we had Merrick Garland, that's the Attorney General, isn't it?
Yes.
Wanting to recategorize angry parents at school board meetings as terrorists.
Yes. It's insane. It's so ludicrous that the Democrats are going to be wiped out at the midterm, which is why they can't allow it to happen. So I'm convinced they're either going to have a new pandemic and bring about a lockdown so they can steal it using mail-in ballots again, or claim all these shootings. And believe me, I investigate these Basel, and they are running one state shooting after another. Buffalo and Uvalde both were completely artificial amateurish. I've done a huge amount on both of them to justify, some kind of new red flag laws minimally, which circumvent due process. They allow the government to confiscate property without due process, which is a violation of the Seventh Amendment. And I dare say, therefore, are going to be declared to be unconstitutional. But all the mischief takes place between the time they begin or initiate these unconstitutional acts and the time it takes to work its way through the court and to be declared to be unconstitutional. I mean, it's just shocking what's going on here. This is a totally undemocratic, un-American, unconstitutional administration. They share the view of George W. Bush that the Constitution is just a goddamn piece of paper.
Yeah, one can always tell the phony events, like two recent shootings, through A, the media coverage of them, which is invariably immediate and blanket. We had the same thing, I remember noticing particularly the Boston bombing. Here in the UK, he suddenly went to, I was listening to a soccer match on the radio, and that station immediately went to a blanket coverage of the Boston bombing. I mean, same with these recent shootings. Because the word comes down from the shadow government that this is what the major networks have to be covering. So, A, you get that, and B, you get the immediate politicization of the event afterwards. So rather than any sort of genuine inquiry as to the circumstances, as to the motives, etc., instead, you get the conclusions very quickly jumped to, and the measures, always gun control, never anything to do with mental health, Jim, although if there is a crisis in America, that's where it is. The conclusions are, and the remedies are immediately presented to the public and invariably involve restrictions on civil liberties one way or another. So the hallmark of the staged event for listeners is, one, whatever network you're watching will be interrupted to bring you wall-to-wall coverage, and two, you will very quickly be told what the political outcome of this has to be.
Yes, 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 yes. There's a new report from Ilhan Omar, who went on MSNBC and said the way they're going to go after Tucker Carlson is to claim he's promoting the big lie, namely that the election of 2020 was stolen, when it's not a lie at all. But they're going to use their weaponized Department of Justice, and as you say, they're filtering out any actual conservative or reasonable person who voted Republican or supports Donald Trump from the FBI. They're turning it into the American Gestapo. This is just beyond belief that it should be happening in the United States, but it's happening before our very eyes this very day, even as we speak.
Yeah, I'm no fan of this, but I was pleased to see Ted Cruz cross-examining a representative of the FBI. Did you see that, Jim?
Tell us about it.
I'm just getting the story up here. He recently tweeted out that on Tuesday, he questioned a senior FBI official and referred to the current House hearings as a kangaroo court, which indeed they are. Is the kangaroo court in the House willing to press hard and get real capital answers as to what happened with the FBI on January the 6th? Or is this circus simply a failed Democrat campaign commercial? He said in his tweet. Now, needless to say, that, you know, that's blasphemy. This is the point, Jim. Of course, the San Antonio paper here goes on to say the so-called fence erection is an unfounded conspiracy theory that claims an FBI informant incited a group of rioters, etc. I'm pleased to see a senator standing up like that, because the response of Republican lawmakers has been, in general, particularly feeble to this whole charade. You know, the only Republicans on the committee are Liz Cheney and Kitzinger, aren't they? Who were both neocons. And as you pointed out, the reason why Trump and his supporters and his re-energizing of the Republican base is so threatening to the deep state is because he isn't a neoliberal or neocon. And both main parties, and the same applies in this country, have been hijacked. I put that prefix neo in front of them because there's a world of difference between a genuine conservative, the likes of Ron Paul, whose instincts are libertarian, or on the other hand, Trump, whose instincts are, again, libertarian and nationalistic, world away from the globalists, both in the Democrats and the Republicans. People like Liz Cheney have far, far more in common with Nancy Pelosi than they do with Donald Trump. On the Democrat side, similarly, there's a world of difference between the likes of Denis Kucinich, for example, although he's been marginalized recently, and what I would call old school liberalism, and the authoritarian, warmongering neoliberals that we see in power. And the neo-wings of both parties are virtually indistinguishable. They both promote foreign wars, they're both authoritarian, they're both fundamentally undemocratic, etc. And out on the wings in both parties, you have something still vaguely resembling what they were originally intended to be. Now, in the case of the Democrats, I'm afraid the genuine liberals have been crushed. I mean, you know, the term liberal has been reinvented and reused now to basically mean any kind of idiot. But I mean liberal in the sense of believing in a liberal pluralistic society, Jim, where we tolerate other people's points of view. Liberal in the best sense of the word, meaning generous. Those liberals have been completely marginalized in the Democratic Party in favor of the corrupt Pelosi's, Maxine Waters, and Chuckie Schumer, and all the rest of the gallery of ghouls that inhabit the upper echelons. Trump, on the other hand, arrived in Washington with virtually no political friends whatsoever and was eschewed by the neocon establishment, who are doing their darndest in league with the neoliberals of the Democratic Party to make sure that no such populist resurgence ever happens again. Personally, I support populism, whether it be from the left or the right. I want to see the will of the people represented.
That's right.
In our political institutions, and not this sort of perverse, distorted version of political theatre that we have today.
Another name for populism is democracy, for crying out loud. And the Democrats and the oligarchs and the rich and wealthy here in the U.S. can't abide real democracy. They can't stand it. Elon Musk, by the way, done quite a service by exposing that Twitter has been grossly exaggerating its number of followers, that it's got all kinds of bots, that it's got algorithms that are sorting out and censoring participation. I got booted off of Twitter about a year and a half ago, even though I had only recently joined. I had about 2,500 tweets. I had about 2,500 followers. One day I was there, the next day not. But Musk is doing a good job. If he buys and turns it into a real forum for free speech, that would be a marvelous development. Of course, it's on hold because he's discovering the amount to which it's all a facade, that they've been deceiving their stockholders by corrupt acts of exaggerating how many followers are participating on Twitter.
Yes, I can well believe it, Jim. Social media, for all its faults, is the one avenue that we have remaining, and Twitter in particular, because it's sort of, for want of a better expression, where the chattering classes gather, isn't it? It's the town square of the social media outlets, and it can be very influential these days. It can make a big difference. And the silencing of conservative, libertarian voices, just alternative narratives, period, is very damaging. The point we've reached now, and this is the case just reading these Texas newspaper reports about Ted Cruz, and what's so disappointing, and I know that this has been the bugbear of your entire career over the last 20 years, is whether it's January the 6th, whether it's the stolen election itself, whether it's 9/11 or the state shootings or anything else, is the refusal of corporate media to look at the evidence.
Yes.
Instead, we have this blanket dismissal with a papal wave of the hand. Oh, no, that's all a basis conspiracy theory. We can't look at that. but never any examination of the facts. Further, what we're now seeing, because they don't like us even talking about these things, is an attempt to criminalize alternative viewpoints, alternative narratives, to turn us into outlaws, Jim. Dangerous legislation in the UK on its way through Parliament at the moment, the so-called National Security Bill. I think there's similar rumblings in the US. Though, fortunately, you have your First Amendment, which of all the amendments to the US Constitution is singularly the most important. But they're going to try and stage more and more events to make it look as if both the First and the Second Amendment are somehow no longer valid in this day and age. And in order to do that, they've got to create a climate of fear and, sort of engineer events to make it look as if free speech itself is dangerous.
Well, the left-wing lunatic Michael Moore has even proposed repealing the Second Amendment. I mean, the guy has so totally lost it. Though he has been a skeptic of climate change, which is all to the good, because that's being used as a phony framework for depriving us of the right to what they call fossil fuel, but what is actually an unlimited supply of oil that Earth produces naturally that the American people don't comprehend. The whole idea of going to electric vehicles is just ridiculous. Costs more energy to produce than they save. We have no way to dispose of them. Charging takes forever. Once Americans realize that they'll save money on gas, but they'll double or triple the amount of time it takes for them to make a trip. They're going to realize this is absurd because they may have to stay in a motel overnight. They may have to spend more time in restaurants just wasting time while the vehicles are being charged. I mean, it's just insanity gone amok. We'll be right back with Basil Valentine after this break.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
If you think for 1 second that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourselves. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. The time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Not giving up. Revolution Radio.
Amazon banned my book so you wouldn't learn what really happened at Sandy Hook. It was a FEMA drill presented as mass murder to promote gun control. Then they sued to shut me up, and the Wisconsin courts played along. I have the proof and the law on my side. What I don't have is the money. They want to do to us what they've already done to Canada. Take guns, impose tyranny. It's on the way with Remington's help. First insurance, then registration, then confiscation. I'm asking SCOTUS to stop it. GiveSendGo.com, funding Fetzer. Check it out. This is for all the marbles.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Jim Fetzer with my special guest, Basil Valentine from the UK. Basil, you were mentioning developments in the UK. I've been very concerned ever since guns were banned in the UK, and then they had an epidemic of knife attacks. And when knives were banned, I said, what's next? Potato peelers? And by God, it happened. They banned potato peelers. So I've been very concerned. London may be my favorite city. I've been there 7 times. I really like the UK. But I've been very distraught over what's going on. Tell us more about this latest development.
I'm awfully sorry, Jim. I was making a phone call there and muted the volume for a second. I heard you say about something about potato peelers being banned. What was your salient point before that?
That I've been very concerned that I have great affection for London. It may be my favorite city. I've been there 7 times. When guns were banned, you had an epidemic of knife attacks, and then knives were banned, and then I thought, what's next? Potato peelers, and potato peelers were banned. So I've been very concerned about developments in the UK, and you were mentioning the latest threat, which I take as the civil liberties. Please pick it up from there.
I'm afraid to say that epidemic of knife crime is almost exclusively gang-related. It's nothing to do with people like me. It's nothing to do with provinces. It's nothing to do with rural England. It is happening chiefly in Greater London and to a lesser extent other big urban conurbations where there are gangs of young people. And unfortunately, the deterioration in culture that we've seen on both sides of the Atlantic, the lack of proper responsible fatherhood, the lack of leadership in society as a whole, filters through to this extremely dysfunctional way that a lot of young people have of behaving towards each other. As I say, it isn't uniform. It is an urban thing. Of course, it's worrying. It's particularly worrying. I've got friends with a boy aged 10 or 11 or something, and they live in a part of South London where knife crime is rife. a boy was stabbed to death about 6 months ago, very near where they live. And another boy was then stabbed to death at a vigil held for the first boy. So, it's...
Well, Basil, what is the situation with regard to civil rights in the UK? It seems to me it's becoming nearly as authoritarian as the Democrats would have the United States.
Yeah, I mean, Boris Johnson, the current Prime Minister, who just survived a vote of no confidence by the skin of his teeth the other day, as a result of his having held a small drinks gathering at number 10 Downing Street during the lockdown, dubbed Partygate.
Right.
In that time-honored way that any scandal has the word gate.
Right.
As a suffix ever since Watergate. Johnson's instincts are not authoritarian. He's a terrible egotist, very vain, very ambitious still. Sees himself as some sort of latter-day Churchill, but he's not a World Economic Forum stooge and fundamentally an authoritarian like that dreadful Blair man that we had 20 years ago, or the faceless piece of paper that currently heads the Labour Party, Sir Keir Starmer. Absolutely dreadful bloke. The deep state in Britain creeps ever closer towards authoritarians. You're absolutely right. And although Johnson himself once said that if he was ever issued with an identity card, he would cut it up and eat it, he appeared to change his tune during the scandemic. And at one point, we were on the brink, literally on the brink of vaccine passports, something that actually got me up to London protesting. Only a week ago, the National Health Service was still advertising for a COVID pass administrator, something that prompted a Conservative MP to get up in the House of Commons and question the Secretary of State, the Minister for Health, about. He said, how come, given that we COVID's gone away and we decided we're not having COVID passes, why are you advertising for a COVID health administrator? And the Minister was extremely embarrassed, and within minutes, that particular advert for that job was taken down. However, civil liberties are, as you know, a constant battle. You know, you can never be complacent. And the big one that we've got coming down the line is the so-called Online Harms Bill. We don't have a written constitution in the UK. Our constitution, such as it is based on precedent, that we've done it before this way, and so we will continue to do it this way. And that includes freedom of speech. But freedom of speech started to be eroded with the so-called hate speech laws, where we began to make the expression of a human emotion, namely hatred, illegal. Now, that doesn't mean that I like to spew hate over the internet or anywhere else for that matter, or express it in any way, shape, or form. But once you start legislating against an emotion, once you start impinging on free speech, even in what is supposedly a benign way, like outlawing hate speech, you're on the rocky road to authoritarianism. Now, this Online Harms Bill is supposed to be there to protect children from predators and from seeing things that they shouldn't see, and so on and so forth, and an awful lot of things that in it that nobody could disagree with. But of course, there are also sections in it that include that much maligned word, misinformation, and the spreading of misinformation, and how this spreading of so-called misinformation may become criminal offence. But of course, what is misinformation? Quite a hoo-ha this week on Twitter over the announcement by the Pentagon hardly mentioned in the United States, that they have 45 or had 45 biolabs operating in the Ukraine. Well, my first question about that is, what on earth are they doing with 45? 45? Well, you know, one or two aren't enough. They have to have 45 separate, you know, biotech, biowarfare laboratories. I mean, what an insane planet that these things even exist in. But their existence was deemed a Russian talking point until only a few days ago. And if you mentioned the Pentagon biolabs, you were simply spouting on behalf of Putin. And yet, now we've had the admission that they are. So, you know, misinformation can't be defined unless we take everything to a court of law. Well, we can't have some sort of arbitrary ombudsman or government-appointed quango declaring what is and what isn't misinformation.
Well,
I'm glad to say in the States you managed to get rid of it, and that clown woman and her entire body were dissolved before they started. But it wouldn't surprise me if they didn't come back in some hideous Frankenstein form.
I'm among the first professional philosophers at the time to address the distinction between misinformation and disinformation. Misinformation merely being false information. But any time you have a difference of opinion, someone's right and someone's wrong. So you can't criminalize misinformation unless everyone who has a conflicting opinion is going to be held to have violated some law. And then you have the obligation of figuring out who's right and who's wrong, which is the whole point of rational debate, as Sir Carl emphasizes, which is our most effective method for uncovering the truth. You have to take most points of views, look at the evidence, and sort it out. Disinformation, of course, is a deliberate propagation of misinformation, knowing it's false, with the intention to deceive an audience, which the government, the American government, is doing in spades. The January 6th Commission being a perfect illustration, where Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, and the whole Democrat Party have gone whole hog to devote themselves to the promotion of disinformation, to wit, false information about January 6th. And they want to criminalize anyone who is on the wrong side, just as Ilhan Omar wants to go after Tucker Carlson for supporting what she's calling the big lie, which is the theft of the 2020 election, when the evidence it was stolen is simply overwhelming. This is a total abdication of rationality and responsibility, dereliction of duty. It's an atrocity, unconstitutional, undemocratic. I am simply appalled.
We're also in danger of losing the legacy of the Enlightenment. You know, this kind of demonization of somebody else's position as heretical went out with papal infallibility in the 17th century. And, you know, we began to see that actually evidence-based inquiry, rather than simply the uniform assertion of belief, was the way forward for humanity. And now that's coming under threat again, with counter-narratives being attacked, not merely as wrong, but as heretical. And the espousers of counter-narratives, like Tucker, even in the very meek way that he does on his program, invaluable though it is, peddlers of counter-narratives are heretics. And they must suffer the modern equivalent of burning at the stake, which is that they are silenced, deplatformed, and prosecuted in some way. Well, that's the direction of travel that we're going. And it's extremely dangerous. It's the antithesis of a liberal society that we grew up in and that we've taken for granted. We have to push back against that at all times and in all places. And we have to be prepared to go to law to do so. Though I know from your recent experience, Jim, the courts don't want to hear the evidence any more than anybody else does.
Well, it's an odd situation in Wisconsin, Basil, where under summary judgment protocols in this state, the judge has the right to exercise his own discretion about facts. And if the facts are in his mind unreasonable, then he can just set them to aside as though they did not exist. So he took all my evidence and no one had died at Sandy Hook and just set it aside as unreasonable, even including the reports of two forensic document experts that the four different death certificates, all versions for the same child who allegedly died at Sandy Hook Elementary on 14 December of multiple gunshot wounds. Their conclusion that all four were fake, he simply set them aside and ruled they were all four authentic. I mean, it's just absolutely stunning. So I'm now before the Supreme Court of the United States to point out that this is absurd, that Wisconsin has a woefully, grotesquely abusive summary judgment procedure, that in the state of Texas, for example, my case would have been thrown out or sent to a jury immediately, because a proper summary judgment, where you can only apply if there's no disagreement on the facts, would have required the movement, namely the plaintiff, who calls himself Leonard Posner, to whether he agreed with me that no one had died at Sandy Hook, it was a FEMA drill, blah, blah, blah. And as soon as he said no, then it would have gone to the jury. But this judge, because Wisconsin has this aberrant methodology, was able to just set it aside, and the Wisconsin Court of Appeals agreed with him, and the Wisconsin Supreme Court declined to review, even though it was egregious. In fact, it's ironic. In the Court of Appeals, you have two paragraphs virtually in succession where they lay out the official narrative of Sandy Hook and say no one could reasonably disagree, and then they lay out what I have to say about it and essentially just set me aside as though I were a nut job. I mean, it's bizarre, but it's perfect for the Supreme Court puzzle, because it's a problem not only in Wisconsin that's ongoing. Every single day that a new case is cited under summary judgment in Wisconsin, someone else has been subjected to an abuse in violation of the Seventh Amendment, where I'm asking it be incorporated, as it were, within the 14th to made uniform by rejecting this case, reversing mine and making summary judgment uniform, which is reinforced by a retired professor of law who informed me that the abuse of summary judgment is the greatest problem with the American judicial system and has been for over 50 years. So here's an opportunity. I've teed it up. But rather than stay there, let's go to Ukraine, the Great Reset, all that. I want your take on world affairs and how things are proceeding. How do you assess Russia's intrusion? Because when Putin gave what I regarded as his magisterial statement on the 24th of February explaining why they were going to intervene militarily in Ukraine, I thought he had a solid case that he was acting in accordance with international law. And I've been simply opposed by the reaction of the West. Your thoughts?
Well, you know, it's a very dangerous situation. That's my first thought. And to use one of my favorite words, it demonstrates the paucity of wisdom on the world stage. Putin himself being arguably the only sort of genuine statesman or mature leader out there at the moment. The leadership in the United States is absolutely appalling. Our Foreign Secretary, Liz Truss, is dreadful. She can't, you know, pronounce words properly, no understanding of history or geography. And Boris is little better. I say it's very dangerous because, you know, there is the danger of World War III, of escalation. There are no wise heads counseling peace. There is no intervention by the United Nations. Instead, we have this sort of black and white, Putin bad, Zelensky good narrative rammed down our throats, all supposed to be waving Ukrainian flags and supporting the brave Ukrainian people. No mention of the fact that the 14 or 15,000 ethnic Russians and Ukrainians, for that matter, in the eastern provinces had been killed, had been persecuted, that water supply, pensions, all sorts of communications and basic services to those provinces had been cut off, which is why Putin invaded in the first place. So, you know, very, very boils down to the point of being inaccurate narrative being served in the West, and which people have gobbled up, much as the same way as they do with January the 6th, COVID, or anything else. You know, the assumption is that people won't look too deeply and will dutifully follow the latest thing, whatever it is, and indeed they do so. Cracks are now starting to appear between Zelensky and the animated cadaver masquerading as President of the United States, as U.S. intelligence apparently alerted Zelensky that Russia was preparing an invasion, and he dismissed it, Zelensky, and now his aides have hit back at Biden's remarks that the Ukrainian president, quote, didn't want to hear it. So cracks are starting to appear in the alliance there, and a lot of people are saying it's only a matter of time before Zelensky is chucked under the bus. It's only a matter of time before people realize that the Russians are winning and the Russians are going to win, and that some accommodation is going to have to be made with the Russians. Everybody's so obsessed with these borders and how, sovereign integrity must be maintained at all costs. Well, the West too weren't too bothered about it when it came to Afghanistan or Iraq or Libya or Syria for that matter. And the borders of Ukraine were drawn up in the Soviet era, when national boundaries were much less important because they were all part of the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, the USSR. So these ethnic tensions and, you know, disparities between ethnic groupings and national borders were not as important. It's only after the collapse of the Soviet Union that suddenly borders drawn up by Stalin and Khrushchev suddenly became relevant, when Ukraine became an independent country. But Ukraine and Russia have been sort of joined at the hip a bit, like, I mean, I was going to say America and Canada, but really more like England and Scotland or something. The two are indivisible. The Russian Federation of the Russian nation really started in Ukraine, and Kiev was its first capital. So it's very sad, really, that we've seen this sort of internecine warfare between the two. The answer, of course, is, as always, self-determination. Why are the peoples of Donbass not allowed to determine their own future through a referendum? Simple as that. You know, there's no need. There was never any need for any war. It could have all been settled peaceably. But it seems like the US administration, ever since Victoria Nuland installed Zelensky as a puppet, have been spoiling for a war and have been provoking the Russian bear.
Yes.
Which reminds me of another point which, you know, has come up in the UK recently over a scandal, which I don't want to mention directly for all sorts of reasons. But basically, the UK deep state, UK shadow government, and that in the United States as well, has for the last 10 or 15 years been increasingly hostile towards Russia for no apparent reason. We have been encircling it with military bases. We broke all the agreements made at the fall of the Berlin Wall not to incorporate the former Warsaw Pact countries into NATO. We've gone against that. Do you remember? I mean, it was a stupid comment at the time, the end of history, at the time of the fall of the Berlin Wall. But we were all supposed to enjoy a peace dividend, and things did indeed look quite rosy in the late 1980s and 90s, with Russians being sort of welcomed into the West. Of course, there was always the problem of the looting of the Russian state assets, which somehow made their way into the hands of a tiny few oligarchs who became fabulously, insanely wealthy at the expense of the Russian people. But generally, McDonald's opened up in Russia, and Western pop stars and rock stars went touring there, and Russians were able to leave the country freely, and travelers, tourists, and, you know, there was a generally good feeling. There was no longer any need for us to demonize Russia or have all these missiles pointing at it. In fact, at the time of the collapse of the Warsaw Pact, NATO itself should really have been disbanded at that point, because it no longer, you know, its primary function was completed. It effectively won the Cold War, and it was all over. But at the kernel of it is some sort of animosity towards Russia and towards the Russian people, which I find bewildering. I can't quite understand where it's coming from. You know, why supposedly, you know, intelligent, peace-loving people want to go to war with what is still one of the world's superpowers.
Oh, yes, and they have far superior military equipment than the West. They could annihilate the West easily. They could take out the East Coast with a single EMP or dirty bomb and, you know, make it uninhabitable for 250 years. They have new types of weapons that are non-nuclear that can do devastation. Basil, we're about to hit the break. I want to invite callers to join us and raise any questions or make any comments they'd like about what we've been discussing here today. The number 540-352-4452. 540-352-4452. Mitchell will get you on the air. We'll be glad to hear from you with Basil Valentine from the UK and his take of what's going on here in the USA and abroad. Basil, I'm just delighted you could join me today. We're on the verge of the break, and everyone, use your opportunity here to call in. The lines are open, 540-352-4452. 540-352-4452.
Like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Revolution Radio every Wednesday 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia. at freedomslips.com. The People Station.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job? That Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes? That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, I'm here with Basil Valentine of the UK, and we have a first caller on the line. Brian, join the conversation.
Yeah, you were talking about election fraud earlier, Jim, and there was a case that will really resonate with you that I think is the most egregious ever. You being a Wisconsin football fan, I'm sure you're aware of Dr. Tom Osborne of Nebraska.
Go ahead, Brian. Fill us in.
Okay. He was the Nebraska football coach from 1993 to, when was it, 1997. And he never lost. He won at least nine games every season. He won the national championship in 94, 95, 97. Should have been 96, but his team got the flu in the Big 12 championship game. He ran for Congress, and he did okay in Congress. Then he decided to run for governor of Nebraska. Well, here's a guy that's probably like a god at Nebraska. I mean, everybody just adores him. He's got a doctorate. I think it was even in political science, and he was really successful in Congress. But for some reason, when the election came, he just couldn't get the job done. And to me, that was just so dumbfounding at the time. That was before I woke up. So I just could never figure that out. They said he lost the rural vote. Well, you know, the farmers in Nebraska, he probably got every, you know, farmer vote there was. So to me, that just was the first example in my mind of unbelievable election fraud.
Yes. But I don't think we've ever had anything like what occurred here in the 2020 election by any stretch. Do you have election problems in the UK, Basil, or do you think your elections are for the most part on the up and up?
I'd always thought they were on the level, but I'm starting to question them increasingly. The 1970 general election, which then Prime Minister Harold Wilson lost very surprisingly to Ted Heath, is one such example. And Ted Heath then took Britain into what was then the common market, which became the European Economic Community and then the European Union, without a referendum a couple of years later on very unfavorable terms.
Without even a referendum, this sounds like a Rothschild effort here, just as I'm convinced the Rothschilds are behind the theft of the election. Ultimately, George Soros and Barack Obama appear to be manipulating the puppet Biden, for whom no one has any respect. And incredible to me there's even any question of the Democrats running Biden again. I mean, it's just ludicrous. I mean, how stupid can you get? Everyone despises a guy. He's got a 22% ranking among young people and 24% among Hispanics today in the U.S.
Yeah, I mean, his ratings couldn't be lower, but what have they got to do with it? No, I agree. I mean, he'll be well into his 80s in the next presidency. He's already completely incoherent, seemingly partly incontinent, and frankly an embarrassment.
Yes. Yes.
He didn't even win the primaries. That was all massaged as well. I mean, the you know, Democrats seem very adept at rigging national presidential election. They rig their own primaries as well.
Yes.
I mean, Bernie Sanders would have won 6 years ago, and he would have won 2 years ago if that hadn't all been rigged.
Yeah, he would have won the Democrat nomination if it had been on the up and up. Yes, absolutely. That's what led Seth Rich to download the emails from the DNC server and to share them with Julian Assange, who, sad to say, has been grossly abused by the British government at the insistence of the American, when Julian Assange is one of the great truth tellers of our time. I think he deserves medals for his investigative journalism, virtually unparalleled in history.
Well, we had the rather macabre spectacle only this week of Tony Blair, who lied us into an illegal war, being rewarded with the highest order of chivalry in the UK. He was made a Knight of the Garter in a ceremony at Windsor Castle only a few days ago. The Garter is a, Knights of the Garter are a special order of sirs.
Sure.
The gift of the monarch herself. The sovereign herself has the gift of who becomes a Knight of the Garter. And Blair had not been ennobled until this point. And usually outgoing prime ministers are made a lord, a member of the House of Lords, or given the knighthood almost immediately upon leaving office. But Blair wasn't, and that was thought to be because of his, you know, disgraceful behaviour and the fact that he is so toxic amongst the British people. But finally, now in 2022, he's got his emolument. Of course, he's been very well rewarded by the shadow government, Jim. He's become a multimillionaire, as has Barack Obama, of course. You know, no bad deed goes unrewarded by the deep state. You should know that.
Yes. Yes, it's outrageous. Brian, did you have a further comment or issue you'd like to raise?
Well, I was going to talk about Ukraine since you were talking about that. And, you know, veterans today, when it comes to anything other than Trump, okay, they're usually spot on. And they had an article, it's been years ago, about how what would be the equivalent of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the OKW-OKH, that they took orders from the City of London to massacre the native people of Ukraine that were there at that time. And it's because, of course, that was Khazaria, and, you know, they wanted that back. And I just found that astounding, and it just shows you the power of deep states between different countries. You know, the Nazi deep state, the English deep state, that their tentacles are so deep that they can give orders to the German high command to carry out all these massacres in Ukraine, and that's what happened. So
yes.
I think that kind of is part of things today. The deep state, that's Khazaria, the home of the Khazars, who were the Ashkenazi Jews.
Yes, yes. Basil, your thoughts?
I could hardly hear what I'm saying, Billy, but there's certainly an international network of these so-called deep states, because they seem to act in concert. You get these world leaders all wearing the same great beset lapel pins, all singing from the same song sheet. We saw that with the scamdemic, the so-called COVID pandemic, more than with anything else, I think, in recent history, where simultaneously governments around the world enacted the most draconian policies imaginable, designed, I think, to soften people up. It was an exercise in trauma-based mind control, and it was to see just how far they could push people, how far down they could push people before they responded. And the vaccine mandates, of course, are an attempt to turn people into cattle, because only livestock, sheep and cows and beef and all the rest of it, they have no choice as to what is injected into them. And, you know, we've got an ongoing struggle on our hands, because it's gone away again for the time being. But we've got an ongoing struggle on our hands to maintain the all-important principle of bodily integrity. Interesting, and sovereignty. Interestingly enough, there was a hilarious tweet.
Go ahead, Basil. Yeah.
Do you want to put Freon in it? Yeah, sure. Go ahead, get it right.
Basil, did I lose you? I wanted you to...
No, I'm here. I could hear Brian talking in the background, but...
Sorry, I had someone talking to me. I'm sorry.
But Brian, why don't you just mute yourself for the moment while Basil replies. Go ahead, Basil. I'm very worried about... You know, the UK records show all these vaccines are causing massive deaths. You got funeral directors who are reporting bizarre deaths, all kinds of fibrous material that are in the veins, stuff that they've never seen before, and all because of the vax.
Yeah, I was just going to say that a couple of interesting developments on the dreaded Twitter. I saw a tweet, well, I've gone almost viral, and you can follow me if you want at the following handle, which is @says_Basil, all lowercase. So that's @says_Basil. And I've had over 1,000 likes for a tweet I've quoted. Somebody called Steph Haberman, Haberman, who goes under the handle @StephLauren. Here we go. Get ready for this, Jim, if this isn't world record idiocy. And she said yesterday, the anti-vax crowd's favorite talking point these days. Why are vaxxed and boosted people getting COVID multiple times? Is such a spectacular self-own. They're getting it multiple times because they're not dying the first time, my dudes. This means it's working. I mean, honestly, it just, you know, beggars belief.
Well, it's just idiotic. You know, I mean, you got a pandemic out of a disease with lower than a 1% mortality rate. I mean, it's absurd. You got a test that's absolutely unreliable, that has a 97-98% false positive, that its founder, Kerry Mullis, declared was not to be used as a diagnostic instrument. So they're deliberately abusing it to manufacture, because depending on the cycles at which they calibrate the application, they can guarantee a positive result. So they manufactured a fake pandemic. They took 38 million cases of the flu the year before. And the following, there were only 2,000, because they turned 37,998,000 into cases of COVID. And then they're bringing in a vax that's an experimental medical procedure. They're not following the rules of informed consent. They're going ahead and applying them. And Americans are just dumb enough not to recognize they don't have to take an experimental medical procedure that their life insurance may not even cover up, and that when it's experimental, the manufacturer doesn't have to reveal the contents, which are damaging. Pfizer had a list, Basil, of 1,425 adverse effects that they did not announce because it was experimental, that Judicial Watch has now obtained under Freedom of Information Act procedures. This is grotesque beyond measure. And the millions upon millions, I mean, look, I'm predicting the deaths from the jab are going to be in the billions. And that, of course, was the whole idea. That was the plan.
I fear you are right. I hope you are wrong, Jim. There is now trending on Twitter a hashtag, can we talk about it, with people posting pictures of themselves pointing to the spot on their arm where they received the injection and which is now the source of their infirmity. It's the biggest, the vaccine damage and injuries and deaths is the biggest cover-up in recent history. The idea that these things are continuing to be recommended, including for children and babies, is deeply evil. There is something really, really wrong about the fact that hundreds and thousands of people have been killed and maimed for life as the result of an injection that they didn't want and didn't need, and that was, they were browbeaten in many cases into receiving under threat of losing their livelihood, losing their freedom of movement, their freedom of speech, all their God-given liberties. The thing is an absolute disgrace of the highest magnitude. And at some point, the tsunami of injuries and deaths is going to break into the mainstream, because everybody knows somebody who has been killed or injured by the injections.
This is the greatest scam in world history. I mean, it exceeds the moon landing hoax by many orders of magnitude. And the moon landing hoax didn't have a lot of practical consequences for human beings on planet Earth. But this scam is taking out maybe even billions. I mean, it's just staggering, and it's enduring for years, and it's affecting the quality of life of everyone. The lockdowns, which were unprecedented. Never before in world history had we quarantined healthy people. We only quarantined the sick. Trump was played, and this is maybe his greatest blunder of his political career, to be talked into the lockdowns. Basil, it's very difficult to forgive him for that.
Trump has also been a proponent of the injections as well. I believe he is still to this day.
He needs to reverse himself, because it's a catastrophe and it's ongoing.
And if he did reverse himself, for all that he's ignored by the lying corporate media these days, that would represent a significant development. There is one Conservative MP, Sir Christopher Choke, who raised the subject of vaccine injuries in the House of Commons. It's going to be very difficult for them to climb down, because they were all, and still are, encouraging everybody to have as many of these potentially lethal injections as they possibly could. So the climb down is going to have to come an awfully long way, but it's got to start immediately. I'm glad to say we reached the threshold of 100,000 signatures on a petition about vaccine injuries in the UK, which means that it now has to be considered for debate in the House of Commons, which is something, whether or not we get the debate, whether or not the debate is subsequently publicized or well attended is another matter. But that was a small step in the right direction. There is one sort of semi-mainstream channel in the UK called GB News, which Great Britain News, which was set up a couple of years ago, originally by Andrew Neil, though he has long since disappeared. And they appear to have a modicum of independence, with two commentators in particular, Neil Oliver, who's primarily a geographer, and a chap called Mark Stain, are talking about the vaccine injuries and deaths in their prime time slots, and are having guests on to talk about them. And there's quite a well-known actor called John Bowe, who appeared in a number of primetime programs in the UK. He is setting up a vaccine injury charity. He's inviting anybody who's been injured or knows anybody who's been killed to write to him. He had his Gmail account arbitrarily closed down the other day, losing thousands of emails from the vaccine injured in the process. And unfortunately, he's had to start again with a different email provider. But, you know, so there are, you know, things moving. There are also some legal cases being brought. And there's that tour. I caught a portion of it the other day. There's a group of scientists.
Crimes Against Humanity.
That's the one. Yeah, yeah. So, you know, full power to them. You know, but we've got to get. You know, when it's going to happen, I've no idea, Jim, because you know what a monolith the corporate media is. People don't really believe something has happened unless they see it on the CBS Nightly Report or the BBC 9 o'clock News. And equally, they are convinced that it did happen if they see it there, even if it didn't.
Yes, yes, yes. I know the power of tell, the greatest instrument of brainwashing ever devised by the hand of man. Brian, did you have a further question or comment you'd like to make?
Okay, I had to unmute. Well, I, you know, speaking of the vaccine, I had to take my car into the mechanic, and his 9-year-old niece got the vaccine like a few days earlier, whatever, and the next day she died. And
oh,
so
God.
They were all in an uproar in the mechanic shop. So that just shows you, you know, and to me, the greatest sales pitch ever is word of mouth. And what they've got right now is a lot of word of mouth, like me telling you what happened to this 9-year-old girl. And you know that's going to just, it's going to manifold out there. It's going to really start growing. And I think they're going to be in real trouble once word of mouth gets around cases like that.
Well, I'm sure glad you shared that story, Brian. That was excellent, very disturbing, tragic, of course, very sad. And yet the Democrats and Trump, I mean, this is almost, I'm really saying I'm having a hard time even contemplating forgiving Trump for this. Elon Musk is suggesting he may be supporting Ron DeSantis in 2024. May be gravitating in that direction myself. He's a no-nonsense guy, and he seems to have a backbone of steel. Basil, have you any impressions of Ron DeSantis?
They are uniformly favorable, with one notable exception. He held a meeting of the Florida legislature or the executive or whatever in Tel Aviv, of all places. And like all American politicians, he is an unavowed Zionist of the first order. But I'm afraid it's very difficult to find anybody prominent in American politics.
That's an area where I'm very critical of Donald Trump, too. He bent over backwards to benefit Israel. All these decisions, moving the American embassy to Jerusalem, declaring the Golan Heights to be a part of Israel, where there's a vast supply of natural gas, by the way, discovered beneath the Golan Heights, cutting off the UN refugee agency that was assisting Palestinians. Those are not forgivable sins. Those are mistakes of the first order. And, of course, the Israeli role in affecting our government is never, never addressed in the mainstream. Why? Because they control the press. I have 100 photographs of 100 executives from CNN, every one of whom is a dual U.S.-Israeli citizen. I have another 100 executives from NBC, every one of them is a dual U.S.-Israeli citizen. I have another 100 executives from the New York Times, every one of whom is a dual U.S.-Israeli citizen. Of course, both the AP and Reuters are owned by the Rothschild. Brian, just mute, Brian. Brian, mute. Are owned by the Rothschilds, so they have a complete control over the news media here in the U.S., with the only exception being the alternative. And, you know, when we're able to squeeze a few words in edgewise, we're lucky.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's not dissimilar in this country, except most people here, of course, get their information from the state broadcaster, the BBC, who famously, and I never tire of repeating this, announced the collapse of Building 7 on the afternoon of September the 11th, 2001, half an hour before it collapsed.
Yeah, Jane Stanley. Sure, I know that very well. And you could see Building 7 in the background over her shoulder, which had not collapsed. She made that announcement about 4:57. It didn't happen until 5:20. So you're right, about half an hour. And the BBC's never been able to explain. They got ahead of the script.
Exactly. I mean, at that point, the entire BB newsroom should have been closed down, picked apart, a criminal investigation instigated to discover who told Jane Stanley to announce that. Simple as that. And the whole thing broken up, start all over again, and we might have got somewhere towards finding out who was genuinely behind it.
Yes. Yes.
So since then, they've had absolutely no credibility at all. And I simply cannot watch any BBC output at all. I don't even bother with the sports anymore. And I used to love it 40 years ago. BBC was responsible for some tremendous television, for some great comedy, but very high quality sports coverage. And of course, we believed them, when it came to important world events. But not anymore. And the coverage these days, it's really reminiscent of MSNBC, if anything. It's absolutely a repulsive propaganda from and social engineering from start to finish.
Well, Basil, it's been a delight having you with me here today. I can't thank you enough for joining. I hope you survive the heat wave there in the UK. And I hope the world is able to transcend the threat posed by the Great Reset, the massive pandemic, the vax, and the Ukraine involvement, where the West is increasingly running the risk of provoking World War III. It's been a pleasure to have Basil Valentine as my guest here today on The Raw Deal. I encourage everyone, spend as much time as you can with your friends and loved ones. We do not know how much time we have left.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here, Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyalty? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty! Oh, give me!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence